Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek, back in the studio from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 17th, 2011, episode 208, sponsored by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
Oh, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Jamie. Did you make it home okay?
I did. I made it home okay. It was a drama-free flight, and got here. My husband was waiting on me in his little flight suit to pick me up, so we had a nice, good time that night. Went to dinner, kind of reconnected, and then it was a well-deserved and really appreciated day off yesterday.
Yeah, no, we took most of the day off yesterday, too, because we were kind of beat. We actually drove straight through after the show on Monday and got in about midnight that night. So, and, of course, driving through West Virginia, and you know what that is like, driving through West Virginia. It's up and down and around and up and down and around and up and down and around in the pouring rain three quarters of the way.
And the other fantastic thing about driving through West Virginia is most of the road on the side has there's no lights. So you're driving up and down and up and down at night, potentially, you know, through the rain. Oh, gosh, that sounds awful. But the fun thing about West Virginia is you get to see how the people might live. There'll be like one, you know, like grandma and granddad's trailer, and then there's like three trailers around it, and there's nothing for 100 miles. So
that's
I'm like,
right.
Well, how exactly does that work? Wait, who's accompanying each person? I'm confused. But yeah, it's a little trailer communities all through West Virginia. It was so fun. Beautiful.
Yes,
fantastic.
It is. It's actually very pretty when it's not raining and snowing and sleeting and ice and things, which is what we usually get when we drive through West Virginia.
Oh,
so
fun.
Let's go to Jennifer, and then we have some things we need to talk about. We have a lot of guests lined up today, so let's find out what's coming up on today's show.
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, Shauna Koresh is here to help us understand how to get to the end goal when using on-target training or operant training for all you behavioral science weenies out there. And in an unusual departure from the science theme, TheHorse.com's Christy and Dr. Jones are here with very little science, but plenty of great stories about stall safety. And, of course, Jamie's most favorite dog-eared paperback survived the trip to Philadelphia and back, so the dramatic reading of Black Beauty picks up again after a short vacation.
And we have the cutest story ever coming up in just a couple of minutes. that we're going to tell you about. If you have any access to our Horses in the Morning Facebook page this morning, you're going to want to go look, because I'm telling you, this is the cutest stinking thing ever. And we're going to be talking to them in just a moment. I'm not going to spoil it, but you got to admit, Jamie, those pictures I sent you this morning, that is the cutest thing ever.
It's pretty darn adorable, I'm not going to lie. I was about to say that it's anti-birth control, but not quite, but pretty darn close.
And I'll post those pictures up here in a few minutes. But first, let's do our daily Winnie. My first daily Winnie goes out to our listeners, our sponsors, the hosts on all the different shows, our affiliates, because we just turned 3 years old here at the Horse Radio Network. It was in August. It was this week in August in 2008 that Helena and I put out the first Stable Scoop show. And appropriately enough, it really led the way, because the title of that first Stable Scoop show 3 years ago was Poop Eating Worms and Other Olympic News. So there you go. That sort of describes the Horse Radio Network for the next 3 years, Poop Eating Worms and Other Olympic News. It has to be one of the best titles we've ever had.
Is there a way, Glenn, to take a clip of that and play it maybe tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
I've got
yeah,
to hear,
you'll hear
that.
You'll hear how bad we were.
Awesome. That's what I was going for, because my year one and two of being a DJ, I play it. I'm like, oh, my God, turn it off. It's so bad. It's so bad.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. Everything was pretty bad about it. Yep. But we've improved a little bit for over the last 3 years. And I just want to thank everybody who has helped build the Horse Radio Network to where it is. We've had 11 different shows over the 3 years. There's currently 9 that are functioning. We have done over 1,500 episodes of all the different shows. Over 2,000 guests have been interviewed. And we have 80,000 listeners in 42 countries. So thank you to everybody, and it feels kind of good to have made it 3 years. Because they say if a business makes it 3 years, it's going to make it. So we've turned the
Yay!
Mark.
Well,
you might
I'm
be here next year.
I'm just proud of you for having the vision to start the Horse Radio Network.
Well, it's been fun. It's been, you know, it's kind of a cool job. So, you know, it hasn't been, you know, there are days that it seems frustrating and tough, and then you think, I could be, like, cleaning stalls for a living again. You know, then it doesn't
That'd
be so
bad. Fun. That's a bad example. How about digging ditches?
Hey, I have another daily Winnie. This one goes out to our friend Patricia, who was on the show with us yesterday. And she wrote an article for Horse Junkies United, the blog, called Behind the Scenes at the Horse Radio Network. And she wrote an article about being there with us as we were recording at ADA. And she took some pictures and she gives you some insights to what it's like behind the scenes when we're on the road. And we posted a link to that on our Facebook page, or you can just go to horsejunkiesunited.com and you'll find it there. It was a cool article. It was kind of fun article. She did a good job with it. She's a good writer.
It was awesome, and I sent it to everybody I know, and I'm just going to send everybody the link, like, see, this is what I do. I really do have a job. And I got a text message from my student's mother. I had to teach a lesson last night, and they said, well, see, it's 6:30, shopaholic. So the article kind of calls me out a little bit on the shopping, so definitely check it out. It was very funny, and at least I got to prove to my parents that I actually – do have a job for a living that they can
and
actually
you also
visually
got the proof,
see.
You also got the proof to Chad that you were actually working while you were away.
That, you know, and I sent it to him too.
Here's yours.
Well, this one goes to my fantastic, wonderful, sweetheart, smoochy pants, kissy face, thoroughbred gent. Who usually is all of those
things.
Yeah, wait a minute.
I thought you were going to say your husband.
No, I'm talking about my horse this time, okay? So he's just, you know, he's so happy to be rescued, and he's just such an absolute sweetheart most of the time. That was not yesterday. Apparently, him having 3 or 4 days off was completely unacceptable to him. So I get him to the cross ties, and I put the cross ties on him, and I get him groomed. And this whole time, he's dancing side to side. He's pawing. He's just generally mad at me. And I think it was because I've been there for that long. And, you know, with our cross ties, and we're going to talk about stall safety later, with the cross ties, instead of attaching the cross tie to the big metal hooks up above, I put the piece of baling twine in there, you know, or what Jennifer had bought with, you know, the little equipings. I just have baling twine. Well, apparently in the hot Arizona sun, the baling twine does not have a great extended lifespan. Because my horse was dancing around so much, I thought, I'm going to put the halter over his neck. Usually I can just drop it down and bridle him up, no problem. So I put the halter over his neck and then went to bridle him. The second I released the Kraken from the stupid halter, I tied it around his neck, he bolted. And the baling twine did nothing but disappear. Now, my cross ties are connected to my pasture. So my horse ran away from me at full speed wearing his saddle, my brand new saddle, by the way, the halter around his neck, and about 8 feet on each side of cross tie that was then chasing him, and the bridle because the reins were around his neck. So, mind you, a one-man band takes off into the pasture. There's noises coming from everywhere. Stirrups are banging everything. Cross ties are getting wrapped around his legs. He ran for about 5 minutes before he finally decided that he could stop. And he wasn't even running scared. He was like, ha-ha, screw you. I have run away, busted out of here. I'm out of jail. So once I finally caught said horse and did put the bridle on him, he then got a lunge line attached to him and had a very quick come-to-Jesus meeting where I think he might have seen God. And then I went, and he was perfect after that. But, yeah, good times with the horse in the backyard galloping
around.
Okay,
so now the important horse husband question is, how's the expensive saddle?
The saddle made it fine. Thank God. Okay. You should have seen me, though. I'm chasing him around with a different halter. Like, come here. Come here. Please don't roll. Please don't roll. Come back. It's like bad TV. Like, the horse runs by, and then I run by, chasing him with a halter. I can't leave
That's
him
funny.
Anymore.
That's funny. Well, I have a quick Glory story, and then I think our first guests are going to be on the line here and ready to go. So this is a quick one. So, of course, Glory is our new greyhound, and this was the first time we went away. We had only had her for a couple weeks before we go away for almost a week, and we had this fantastic lady and named Linda, who lives down the street and took care of her for us and took her over to the dog park once or twice a day and spoiled or rotten. So we really thought that when we got to pick her up that she wouldn't want to come home because, you know, she only been here for a couple of weeks. Well, I was wrong. We get to the door. Jennifer walks in the door. Glory just about knocks her over to get to me. She came running up, gave me this big kiss, and I'm telling you, she just about knocked Jennifer over. Made Jennifer feel like 2 cents. Came right to me and then stayed by my side and would not let me get away from her, and then wanted to leave, got right in the car, came home, and settled in immediately. So I was so happy with my doggie that she number one, remembered me, and two, was very enthusiastic about it. So I was just very happy. Jennifer probably not so happy because she got totally ignored. But
yeah,
my dog loves
me. She just shunned your wife, like just knocked her over.
I'm
and
a nobody.
That makes me... makes me think maybe they're beating her over there or something. She just wanted to get out. It can't be you, Glenn.
It was fun. That was nice to know. And she's laying right here under my desk, as usual. Oh. Now we're back to normal here in the recording studio with the dog under my desk. Well, our guest is ready. I'm going to post his pictures here so everybody can look at them on our Facebook page. And Jamie, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest, and you guys are just going to love this.
Yeah, this is very, very, very awesome because, you know, we've reported on Frankie Lovato, former jockey, and his, you know, you think a jockey would own a horse. No, Frankie owns a little pony.
Frankie owns a
little Palomino pony. So we have Frankie and Sandy Lovato on the phone with their granddaughter, Allison. And Allison was in a horse show this weekend with said pony, Popcorn. So, first of all, hi, Allison.
Hi.
How
good
are
morning,
you?
Jamie.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Frankie. I'm putting you guys to the side right now because Allison and I have got to talk about this. This was a big deal. You were in a horse show, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What pony did you ride?
Popcorn.
And is Popcorn your pony?
Grampy's pony too.
Now,
Grampy's pony too.
I figured that. I wasn't going to make her repeat it, but if you could translate every once in a while, that'd be great. So, Allison, did you take Popcorn into a horse show?
Yes.
What exactly did you do at the horse show?
You were in the costume class.
I was in the costume class.
What did you wear?
I was a jockey.
And what was, who was Popcorn?
Secretariat.
Can you hear her?
Can you guys hear her?
Yes, we can.
I can hear her. Yeah, she sounds great.
Yeah.
So she was the jockey. She was Ron Turcotte, and then Popcorn was Secretariat, and you guys even had, like, the matching silks and the saddle cloth and the blinkers and the everything. Tell us, first of all, Frankie and Sandy, thanks so much for doing this and giving us the pictures.
Oh, gosh, you're welcome. We took the pictures, and you know, it's like one of those things that, like, man, these are keepers for a lifetime, you know?
Oh, you got to blow these babies up. These are the cutest darn pictures ever, Frank.
And we have to tell you, when we were standing there doing the pictures, it was like paparazzi. We were surrounded by people taking pictures. This was just so darn cute. I mean, they both just played the part so well. And that was actually one of Frankie's jockey saddles on Popcorn. And that's one of Frankie Jockey helmet covers on Allison's helmet. So we were pretty authentic.
And probably the goggles, too. Who knows?
Oh, the goggles. That's right, Jamie.
Yeah. Well, we're looking at these pictures, and they're just cute as can be. But, Frankie, I got to talk to you horse owner to horse owner for a second. I'm seriously worried about Popcorn. I have major concerns.
Do you mean because you think I might enter him in the Derby? He's going to be three next.
Well, I was just thinking, he looks so skinny, Frankie. It's like he's wasting away. Why don't
you see
him?
Did you see a rib? I saw a rib.
Oh, Jamie, you got to... Well, we're actually at the Huron County Fair. That's where we are this week. And we're in the pony barn where there's minis and ponies and Shetlands. And, you know, most ponies are little fat, roly-poly little things. Well, all he keeps doing is pointing out to me all these ponies that are fatter than Popcorn. And he says, those ponies get to be fat. How come those ponies get to be fat? Oh, he's killing me.
Well, I think I saw a rib, Frankie. I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm worried
so much
about
pay.
So I didn't realize, is Popcorn broke, or was this like a really awesome photo op with some acepromazine included?
Well, he, you know, we messed with him a bit last fall, and this pony, you can't get a buck out of him. We've saddled him, we've lunged him, we've tried to get him, we've chased him around, and we can't get a buck out of him. So he took to a saddle like it was on his back his whole life. And then Allie was, we'd lead him around, and she's been riding him on his back, and he just doesn't seem to mind at a little bit. So when we did this, we thought, well, let's try the racing saddle. We did have another saddle we tried with Allison Ride, but we tried the racing saddle. The it's kind of funny, but that's a real racing girth that he's wearing, an undergirth. that actually it's a little loose, but it fit him snug enough where that saddle stayed tight, and we had a nice thick pad underneath that saddle. But he's been good as gold. He doesn't mind people. You can't fade this pony. So we thought, well, it was just, we went for it, and Allison, she can ride him all day long like that.
Yeah, we haven't introduced him bit or anything yet. I mean, this has just been messing around and just getting him used to things, and no serious training like that. Just, you know, just a little messing around with him.
Well, you know what? If you've got a pony, having owned ponies my whole life, if you have a pony that's green broke and is that good, you've got a good pony, because normally they would just be dumping Allison on her head every 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what? We are so lucky, because I don't know if we've mentioned this, you know the history. Popcorn was actually a rescue. We actually adopted him from a rescue in southern Ohio called Lewis Farm and Rescue, Equine Rescue. And we had just seen him online as a yearling, and Frankie just fell in love with him. And so we adopted him. Actually, he was a present, Frankie's Father's Day present last year. And the minute he got off the trailer, we knew we had something special. He's just a great mind for a pony.
And he loves
well,
to eat.
Well, I got
to
ask. I got to say, Frankie, that your wife must be after you a lot. Sandy must just be after you a lot, because Popcorn is a lot thinner than the last time we saw him. And you and I do like, I think you're going back on unnatural horsemanship. I think you're going back
well,
on
know
it.
What it was.
I think you're not living up to
I wasn't
it.
Taking a fat pony to fair, I kept telling him. So Popcorn's been on a pretty hefty diet. I mean, he still has that muzzle that we told you about that Frankie made the hole bigger, the grazing muzzle with the bigger hole. But up to the 2 weeks prior to fair, I was actually getting him, you know, letting him let me put the pony in a little earlier every day. And, you know, I mean, and, you know, he looks good. He's nice and healthy. And I'm sure as soon as he gets back home, Frankie will, you know, fatten him up until next year. But that was my one condition. I am not taking a fat pony to fair.
I got to ask, Allie, how long have you been riding horses?
Since I was four.
And how old are you now?
Five.
Five? Okay. And I have to say, Allie, you have the prettiest smile ever. Do you ever stop smiling?
No.
Not when she gets to ride Popcorn. Who wouldn't smile?
I got to tell you a funny thing about with Grammy, with Sandy, working with Allie, and she says, you know, you got to smile for those judges. You got to smile. So even when Allie did not want to smile a little bit, she put on a smile for the judges and the camera. We were hysterically laughing. Yes, because it wasn't always a perfect, pleasant moment. But when that judge came around, boy, she smiled like it was Christmas morning.
How'd she do placings-wise?
Well,
we were in a regular halter class, and then they have a showmanship class for six and under. And so, you know, this is only, I mean, she did show him at fair last year a little bit, but my number one thing is safety. So I actually led him on the other side. And, I mean, he's only two, you know, anything could happen. So the other kids that were in there that were six and under, some of them have been showing for a few years, and they were either by themselves or whoever the adult with them wasn't actually handling the horse. So she didn't place in any of the classes. But you know what? That was okay, because they both did awesome. And like I said, my whole thing right now is experience and fun. It's the costume class that we're talking about right now. That, you know, that's where we shine. And she got third place. She finished third.
Yay!
Good job!
That made it right there. That made her whole day worth it when she got that third place ribbon in her hand. That all those smiles. And when we were standing in line, you know, after we walked around, they had us in line. So as the judge was looking at everybody, I said, okay, Allie, as soon as he gets over here, now get in jockey position. Well, it was so darn cute. She just got her butt right up there and just squatted down. And I think that right there is what got her to third place.
Okay. Now, let me just go ahead and point out that clearly the judge's daughter and granddaughter got first and second, because there is no way that anybody could beat that. It's the cutest thing ever. You guys did so good. Good grandparents.
Thanks, Jamie. You know, I have to tell you, this is a little small-time town, little county fair, but these people are serious about their horses, and they come out there to win. And you got to bring it, man. So we brought it, and we still just got third. Yeah, you're right, though. I
have to tell you, even though I am her granddaughter, I mean her grandmother, I do think we were robbed. I really do think at first place, and I mean that. I mean, I was. I think that, you know what, in our hearts we got first, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, see, obviously you got robbed. Frankie, do you ever walk in and be like, don't you know who I am? Hello? I mean, hello? How could you not place her first place?
You know, it's funny you say that, because usually I'll cower around. Like, I'll just, like, put my hat down over my eyes. I don't want to talk to anybody. Sandy makes fun of me because a lot of people just want to talk about horse racing and being a jockey and stuff. And sometimes I just want to be with my family, you know, but that's one time I'm like, all right, you guys. To realize you just placed her third. So.
Like, don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Real quick, Frankie.
No, like, don't you know who popcorn is?
That's right.
Everybody.
That's the way it should be. That's
I think
he would have
got first if he just had a little more weight on him. Probably thought we were starving him. That's why they didn't give us third.
Yeah, they probably felt
way
sorry
to go,
for
Frankie.
Him.
You go.
Hey, Frankie, before we let you guys go, I know that I read that you're writing like the best idea for a book ever. Tell everybody about it.
Are you talking about my racing terminology book?
Yes, it's so good. What a good idea.
Thank you, Jamie. This is a project I've been working on for nearly 2 years. Whenever we do, it's kind of a neat thing, but in horse racing, we're not around like the average public, and being with the Equisizer and doing some of the expos and stuff, I get so many people that'll come to our table, and besides learning about the Equisizer, they're interested in horse racing and just don't understand it and fascinated by it. And I also do a lot of mentoring with young kids that want to, not just young kids, but all ages that want to get into racing and exercise riding and jockeys. So I started a website called jockeyworld.net, and with that I created this, my DVD, What It Takes to Be a Jockey, and I thought, would it be cool to have a little booklet with some racing terminology that I can stuff inside the DVD and also hand out at these expos? Well, it turned into like a two-year project for me. And the good news is, long story short, I went overboard with it. I couldn't leave it alone. It ends up being it fits in your pocket. It's a 40-page full color booklet with 450 racing terms that fits in your pocket. And the photos that I added to it were throughout my career, just little tidbits with captions that'll go along with some of the terminology. So I just finally got it to print. It's on sale now at jockeyworld.net. And I posted on my Facebook page just last night, so I'm really excited about it, and thank you for mentioning that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's a great idea because so many people, you know, racing is its own little small world, and a lot of times you have no idea. You know what I see? It's like when you go to France, you take a little book of French translations. When you go to the track, you need to take this book, but here's what you need to do to step it up even more is make it an iPhone app where you plug in what they said and then you get the normal translation.
Ooh, I love it. That's a great idea. Well, yeah, there's just so many words in racing that have different meanings, and when you try to talk, or when I do some speaking engagements, I have to try to speak in like almost an unnatural language so people would understand what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then there's words that you just can't get around. So, the terminology booklet is just something I want to say, well, here, read this.
Okay,
it'll
everybody
help.
Go to give the website out. We got to say goodbye to you guys because we got to go to our commercial. But what's the website people can find the book at?
Jockeyworld.net. And it's in the under the store tab. You'll see DVD, books, and it's right on the top toolbar, but jockeyworld.net.
Hey, Frankie, I have one quick question. We had a friend who was an owner of racehorses and was on the backside a lot in the barns, and the only thing she really learned terminology-wise were words we can't repeat here on the show in multiple languages. Are they in the book, too?
I had to leave them out. That's a whole other book.
Learn how to cut on the track.
That's a 4,000.
They'll be on the iPhone app. They'll be in the iPhone app.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Frankie. Thank you, Sandy. And thank you, Allie.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
How cute is she?
Oh, my gosh. She was absolutely adorable and very well coached. I was impressed. I was impressed because at five, you can go, honey, what do you think? And this is your answer. You get nothing. Nothing. You can't make them talk, you know? So she did really good. But obviously she's in a great place. That pony's in an awesome place. And yeah, just how fun. How fun is that? Grandma and Grandpa,
well,
take you to the horse show.
I know. And I was just going to say, you know, what cool grandparents to have, too, when you're 5 years old. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
I don't remember doing fun things like that with my grandparents when I was 5 years old. So, you know, that's pretty neat stuff.
Yeah.
Well, something else that was pretty neat is while we were at Ada, we had the opportunity to catch up with Bo from Back on Track Products and talk to him about a couple of his products. So we're going to hear about one of those right now, and then we're going to be back to talk training.
We are sitting here with Bo from Back on Track Products, and thank you so much for sponsoring today's show.
Yeah.
But since we have you here, we wanted to talk a little bit about the mesh sheet. Why don't you tell us why it's important for right now, because the cooler weather's coming up, and tell everybody a little bit about it.
Our mesh sheet is one of the most bestseller we have, I should say. It really makes a big difference on the horses, and it's not just for horses who have a problem. It's I used to call it the nightly massage. For the increased blood circulation, keep the muscle loose, and all the riders say pretty much the same thing. At the horses feel like they warmed up in 20 minutes before when they start warming up. So the warm up time is a lot shorter.
So do you wear the sheet overnight, or is it just you put it on for?
Overnight is the best result. The more you have it on, the better your result. Of course, in the summer it's too tough, but then they use it like 30 minutes before and 30 minutes after.
Now, what is so magical about it?
Well, we have a Weltex material, and what I do, they reflect your own body warmth back like a for infrared, some increased blood circulation. And, you know, that helps to reduce inflammation in muscle joints. Yeah.
It solves lots of problems.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a product that lasts so long, the blanket lasts. You can never wash it out. It's melted in the thread, so it's an affordable product, too, if you compare it to a lot of other therapeutic blankets out there.
So if they lay down on it, they stain it, they get it muddy, you can throw it in the washing machine.
Yeah, yeah. But it's more like indoor. It's not outdoor. We always say
right.
Indoor. People put it under their turnout blanket, but we always say it's indoor products.
Okay. Well, that is the mesh sheet from Back on Track. It's backontrackproducts.com. Thank you very much, Bo.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much to Bo for joining us. It was fun to catch up with a lot of our different sponsors while we were there. And also to, you know, catch up with old friends that Jennifer and I remember from years ago, from when we used to have our tack business. Well, right now we are going to go to our next guest who joins us here on a regular basis, and that's Shauna Koresh. Shauna is from California. We wake her up early once a month to come here and talk about training. And I think you and Jennifer have a topic planned for today.
Yes, we do have a topic planned for today. And we wanted to talk about how do you take the beginnings of on-target training, you know, if people kind of think, well, how does that segue to real-world stuff and practical stuff. So kind of thought we would go through that process there a little bit or how it works together.
Well, one of those things, of course, that people have a tremendous amount of problems with, and Jamie just described it with her horse today, is standing still. Standing still like on the cross ties and things. So I hope you guys covered that because I think Jamie needs some help.
I'll be listening. Thanks, Glenn.
You're welcome.
And you know what's funny? I think it is the most important behavior. And you see it all the time with people when they start with the on-target training. They start teaching them to do stuff, but they miss the standing still. So you kind of, you know, it's just so important. It's paramount in everything. And how can they pay attention if they're not quiet enough to look at you? But then there's also just the impatient horse, you know, like the young horses that are fidgety. So you have the fidgety horse, and then you have the just teaching them to stand still, like for ground tying or being still. But we start, you know, and for those of you who don't know, start with the clicker and the clicker or other bridge signals. I use a verbal bridge signal. I can use a tactile signal, and that just tells them yes. So whatever it is, but what I'm going to say it is a clicker because a lot of people think of it as clicker training. But so the clicker tells them, yes, what you've just done is correct, or your verb, you know, when you tell them, use a word for it. And so you condition that, and you pair that with a primary reinforcement, which in this case I would use food. And then you next thing you do is I teach them to touch their nose to a target. And I'm also going to tell you the very first thing they learn to do when they're learning to clicker train, I teach them to turn their head away so that they stand still, stand with their head. Eventually their head just stands straight with their eye on you, but not ever touching, mouthing you. And then the next thing we do is move into target training and teach them to touch. It's like a dowel, like 2 feet, or it could be whatever you want, but then it has a marine fishing net float on the end, so it looks kind of like a big Q-tip. So we teach them to touch their nose. I mean, it really does. And this is tools I used at SeaWorld. I teach them to touch their nose to a target. And that's very simple. They do it. They love it. They're interested. They love the process. But then how do you take that to under-saddle behavior or to standing quietly? So the target can be – sometimes it is used physically in teaching a behavior, teaching to lower their head for clipping, to teach them to go into a trailer, to teach them to do a lot of things can be used using the target because it physically can help set them up, get them to do something, you know, to get them to go into a trailer and they're standing around, I hate the trailer. And you go, just touch the target. You already know about touching the target from your stall. And then they go, okay, I'm just going to touch the target. Well, next thing you know, they're loading in the trailer because they're so focused on the target. But then there's a lot of behaviors, you know, like a lot of behaviors I did with BZ Madden. It was, we're going straight to undersaddle and you're not going to use it. But the target still teaches them, it's like a step, it's a learning step. So you're kind of teaching them how to learn in this new way, utilizing the positive reinforcement, how to solve the puzzle.
It's a little bit like you can't learn to multiply until you understand the concept of add.
Yes, exactly. So right, you're giving them, it's a conceptual thing where they start thinking, oh, I have to do something in order to solve the puzzle to get my reinforcement. So it's easy, it's engaging, they love it. So I do that no matter what I'm going to be doing next. Mm-hmm. So then, now let's say, and a great behavior to teach is standing still, and whether it's ground tying or teaching them to be less fussy.
Yeah, I love that whole less fussy concept. Yeah.
Yeah, I just did a video on this, or a gal sent me a video, and you can see the horse is trying so hard to be good, and she's kind of missing it, you know, because she was so busy with the behavior that she was not reinforcing the standing still. So I kind of went back and I did a little video for her and said, you know, really, you're missing a lot of really important behavior, and pretty soon that horse is only going to be doing, and not standing patiently anymore because that's not getting reinforced because we as people tend to forget how important that is.
The little tiny steps, yeah. So if I have a horse that he gets target, he touches his Q-tip, and he thinks it's wonderful, but every time I take the horse out of his stall and I cross-tie him or I tie him up to groom him or something, he just moves back and forth and left and right and just got a mild case of don't stand still. What is the very first step? Well, step one is I touch a target. What's the very next thing that the person needs to observe and reward after touch the target?
Okay, well then the next thing, and as this being the goal, the thing I would always look for is I would always click and reinforce when he's standing quietly. And I would build up that as a so you can just capture it as you're doing things. Let's say you're doing things and you're grooming and he's kind of, you know, how they walk up and back and you're kind of just staying with them and you keep currying. As much as possible, you don't want to draw attention to the fussiness by correcting it because you can inadvertently be rewarding that behavior, you know, because I think this is how I get attention. Look, I don't really want to be here, but they stop and fuss at me, or I don't want to be groomed or whatever it is. They get attention for all that fussiness. We say, stop doing this, stop chewing on this, stop playing, stop. So we actually can actually reinforce that. So the best thing to do is to ignore that, but then on the other side of that coin is to draw attention when they're standing still, because that is what you want to say. That is the behavior that will earn you attention, will earn you, you know, a food reinforcement, will get you what you want. Or even for a moment, if you hate, you know, the vacuum, I will stop for a moment and give you a break from it. I'll reinforce you, draw attention to standing still.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. Because a lot of horses, they're pretty quiet, But then if you, for example, vacuum, a lot of horses, especially those thin-skinned thoroughbreds we all love, they tend to fuss a lot more when they're getting brushed with their least favorite brush with stiff bristles or a curry or something like that. So you have to curry the horse. It's part of what you need to do. So I have the horse who's pretty quiet except when he's getting curried. So I'm going to start currying, and I'm going to curry the part that he dislikes the least. I'm going to use a double negative there. So I'm going to curry the top of his croup because he's usually pretty good about that. And he's standing reasonably still, so I could click and reward while I'm currying that croup because that's when he's the quietest. Is that a good route to go?
That is a good route to go, and then you're building up a good reinforcement history with the right behavior, you know, so he starts thinking, oh, okay, wait, when I was still, I got reinforced. Continue. And then, well, then the next thing you do is I would then, as you move to a different area, his fussier area, and you move slowly. This, I mean, every training process should be in small steps and not really moving to the next step till this step before is solid. And and that's a common training problem. We just kind of want to barrel ahead on our agenda. And so just, you know, and then move down a little bit towards an area that might be towards, not all the way to, an area that might be a more sensitive area. You know, let's say it's, you know, his barrel. So as you start moving a little bit towards his barrel, when he is standing still again, and he may fuss a little bit, but when he makes that choice to stand still for even a little minute, you know, or even seconds, you know, just say, that's good, that was better, and move then towards it. Now, if he keeps fussing, like, let's say you move 6 inches, and you think that shouldn't be, that's not that big a deal, and you move a little bit, and he's good, and he's good, and he's good, and he starts fussing, if you kind of stop, sometimes you're reinforcing him because that sensation is maybe something that he just wants to fuss at as opposed to stand still for. So I kind of keep going until I get them, not trying to be aggravating or annoying, and if they're panicky, of course, I'll just kind of regroup a little bit. But, you know, maybe move back just a little bit and get them standing still again. And pretty soon, and when they're quiet again, you draw attention to that, you can stop that behavior, reinforce them. And pretty soon you're going to have them, you're going to see them making choices. You may see lips still fussing just a little bit because they're going, oh, I'm trying so hard.
Right. But so whenever you're moving towards the area that they don't appreciate being groomed, if you see your horse training you, I'm going to curry the croup. Now I'm going to curry a loin. When you make that direct change and he starts to fuss, you go, uh-oh, better not do that, go back to croup. What you've just done is taught your horse to fuss while you groom his loin.
Exactly. Very, very well put. And that's exactly it. So we kind of, as trainers and people, we forget that a lot. I mean, I see in horse people, they're kind of forgetting. If you break it down, you're like, oh, that makes so much sense. But at the time, you sometimes don't really process. You're just thinking, this is just unreasonable, you know, and because we're thinking it's not that big a deal, forgetting to kind of come from where they might be coming from, and that we inadvertently train a lot of things in our horses.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
Look to the trainer. Look to the trainer for solutions, because sometimes the trainer caused the problem to start with.
Yeah, and it is really, I mean, you know, it's kind of cliche, but it really is teaching the people to kind of be aware of the behavior principles that are in effect whether they know them or not. So the more you learn, the more you go, you know what, I see what I'm doing, or I see why he's doing that. Because if any behavior, and this is just a proven principle, if any behavior increases in frequency, whether it's bucking, it's fussing in the cross tie, whatever it is, if it's a norm, it somehow is serving to be reinforced. It's reinforcing them in some way, shape, or form, whether it's avoiding something they don't want or it is getting something they do want. So in the case of us moving our hand away or stopping to fuss, we may be getting just stopping the behavior is actually reinforcing, or sometimes as we perceive it, correcting them, we may perceive that as, oh, I'm punishing them or correcting them, when they may be thinking, but look, I'm getting attention. You know, like the horse that paws in a cross tie, and we come running up to fuss. Well, he's like, phew, you're back. Ow, 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 you know, or whatever it might be. But you're back.
Too, a horse is a very physical animal in that interaction that we may perceive as unpleasant, for example, shoving them or slapping them with the palm of your hand, he may perceive that as a playful, interactive behavior versus a stop the behavior you're doing. He might have a completely different perception of that physical interaction, and we need to look at ourselves and go, well, I've been using this training technique for 2 years now, and my horse still fusses every time I leave the cross side. Maybe I need to change it.
Yeah, exactly. Something is reinforcing him. What could it possibly be? So if you just rebalance those scales, and it's a good, I think it's a really what you brought up. It is really a big behavior with particularly horses that don't get to socialize. You know, show horses kind of tend to be more on their own. So they want to socialize with somebody, and if that's us, they will take it. You know, they would just
yep, any port in a storm.
Bar and play those horse games. Yeah, and then you think of the stallion-y horses or the colts and the young horses that are learning how to interact socially. And part of that learning process is to engage with other horses. And it's just them learning how to, you know, down the road, it's going to serve them as being dominant or subdominant or recognizing social signals. But as young horses, they learn to test and experiment that. And stallions just learn to fight for their place in the herd. So they fight, and so they start as little colts, learning how to duke it out a little bit. And it's all fun and games while they're growing and learning. And so we, trying to correct them oftentimes, they're like going, yeah, yeah, let's do that. You know, this is fun. So it is. It can be very engaging for horses, and you just don't know. But if any behavior increases in frequency, try to look around, think, you know, this is getting worse. You know, he's bucking more. What's happening? What am I doing? Or, and sometimes we may not know, but the more you kind of think about it, process, you may discover something, or even if you just try something different, it may you may find much better results.
So our take-home today is take small steps towards the end goal, in this case standing still. Be sure to reward the behavior, the desired behavior or attempted behavior at the right time, and not reward behavior you didn't want. And if the technique you're using and the timing you're using is exacerbating the problem, take a step back and check either how you are rewarding or if your reward is if what you think is a punishment is actually a reward.
And I think one other little thing to keep in mind there too, also when you're actually giving the reward. So
the
let's say you're doing a food reward, and you know, like you're teaching your horse to, this happened to me, a gal told me this. She was teaching her horse to lift her foot to have her foot dealt with. You know, she was a young little mare. She was a little filly she was teaching. And she said, but now it's like the horse is pulling her foot out of my hand and putting it back on the ground. And I said, okay. Well, she wasn't using a bridge signal, wasn't using a clicker or something that told her, yes, that's a behavior I like. But she was simply just offering a reinforcement. And I said, okay, well, when do you actually give the carrot? And she said, when I'm done. And I said, where's her foot? It's on the ground. So the horse was actually learning, wait, I can get my foot on the ground. The quicker it's on the ground, the quicker I get my reinforcement. So she was not, you know, the horse was putting together, that is when I get my reinforcement, when the foot's on the ground. So by putting the clicker in there, we actually had a way to tell her, yes, I like that what we're doing right now, and you bookmark it. So she thinks, oh, yeah, when my foot's up, I just earned a reward. So even though then she may be getting fed with her foot on the ground, she communicated the point that she liked that earned her the reward. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You have to, that bridge is what gives you the ability to say, good job, reward later.
Exactly. And that definitely goes into the undersaddle stuff where you can say, flying lead change, I like that, you know, whatever it is, you can say, that's what I like. Even though you're going to reinforce in a moment, you know, that's a nice segue to them, for them to start learning. This is what earned me the reward, this changing of my balance, you know, or this shift in weight, or this picking up this foot. So, yes, definitely.
Well, as usual, Shauna, great stuff to keep my gray matter busy when I go riding this afternoon, because Beaker and I are working on opening and closing gates while mounted. We used to be pretty decent at it, and now we stink, so we have to kind of start at the beginning.
I'm confident you'll get there.
And Jennifer, I hear Jennifer's brain going, and I just want to say that the overgrown Q-tip is not going to work for me. You cannot train me with the overgrown Q-tip, because I hear her thinking, you know, maybe I can get him to focus a little more if I just use the overgrown Q-tip, and I don't think it's really going to work. I'm just saying.
You know, really, Glenn, I would be concerned once Jen starts hand-feeding you treats. That's when you know you're in trouble. Here you go. Eat this. Good boy.
Eat this. Stay. Stay.
Thank you, Shauna. What's your website?
Pleasure. Thank you.
Shauna, give out your website again.
Oh, my website. The easiest one to go to, I think, is AskShauna.com. That's the quickest. It's S-H-A-W-N-A. So that takes you right to a place where you can ask a question, but you can also go to ShaunaKarish.com.
Okay, so that's AskShauna.com. Thank you so much for getting up early to join us this morning.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure, as always, and have a great day, you guys.
All right. Thank you, Shauna. Well, this song today is sponsored by FeedXL. Go to FeedXL.com to find out about your horse's nutrition and what your horse eats. You can go there. There's tons of good information that's free and easy to access about what horses eat and supplements and vitamins and minerals and all that stuff. It's put together by some doctors of nutrition down in Australia. There's some really nice people. And I think you're going to like what you find there. And the cool thing is you can put specific information in about your horse, about what you're feeding your horse, everything that really goes into your horse's mouth. And they analyze that, and they give you reports that shows whether you're feeding too much or too little of any one thing. If you haven't taken the time to go there yet, you need to do that. Stop over to feedxl.com. Well, today's song is from Trish Lynn, and it's Some Kind of Crazy.
Hands.
And that is Trish Lynn, Some Kind of Crazy on Horses in the Morning. I am Jamie Jennings, along with Glenn the Geek, and of course you had Coach Jenna, the producer. And today's show is brought to you by Back on Track, and I know that you all have been sitting around your computer speakers or your phone just biding the time until it was Black Beauty time. And guess what, my friends? The wait is no more. Play the music, Glenn.
This is a dramatic reading by Jamie Jennings of the English classic Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
I saw a great deal of trouble among the horses in London, and much of it might have been prevented by a little common sense. We horses do not mind hard work if we're treated reasonably, and I am sure there are many driven by quite poor men who have a happier life than I had when I used to go in the Countess of W's carriage with my mounted silver harness and high feeding. It often went to my heart to see how the little ponies were used, straining along with heavy loads or staggering under heavy blows from some low, cruel boy. Once I saw a gray pony with a thick mane and a pretty head, and so much like Merrylegs that if I had not been in harness, I should have neighed to him. He was doing his best to pull a heavy cart while a strong, rough boy was cutting him under the belly with his whip and chucking cruelly at his little mouth. Could it be Merrylegs? It was just like him. But then Mrs. Bloomfield was to never to sell him. And I think that she would not do it, but this might have been quite as good a little fellow had he had a happy place when he was young. I often noticed the great speed at which the butcher's horses were made to go, though I did not know why until one day when we had to wait some time in St. John's Wood. There was a butcher shop next door, and as we were standing, a butcher's cart came dashing up at a great pace. The horse was hot and much exhausted. He hung his head down while his heaving sides and trembling legs showed how hard he had been driven. The lad jumped out of the cart and was getting the basket when the master came out of the shop much displeased. After looking at the horse, he turned angrily to the lad. "How many times shall I tell you not to drive in this way? You ruined the last horse and broke his wind, and you're going to ruin this one in the same way. If you were not my own son, I would dismiss you on the spot. It is a disgrace to have a horse brought to a shop in this condition, and you're liable to be taken up by the police for such driving. And if you are need to look for bail, you need not look to me, for I have spoken to you until I'm tired. You must look out for yourself." During this speech, the boy had stood by, sullen and dogged, but when his father ceased, he broke out angrily. It wasn't his fault, and he wouldn't take the blame. He was only going by orders all of the time. "You always say, now be quick, now look sharp, and when I go to the houses, one wants a leg of mutton for an early dinner, and I must be back with it in a quarter of an hour. Another cook has forgotten to order the beef. I must go and fetch it and be back in no time, or the mistress will scold, and the housekeeper says they have company coming unexpectedly and must have chops sent up directly, and the lady at number 4 in the Crescent never orders her dinner till the meat comes in for lunch, and it's nothing but hurry, hurry, hurry all the time. If the gentry would think of what they want and order the meat the day before, there need not be this blow-up." "I wish to goodness they would," said the butcher. "It would save me a wonderful deal of harass. I could suit my customers so much better if I knew beforehand. But there, what's the use of talking? Whoever thinks of a butcher's convenience or a butcher's horse? Now then, take him in and look to him well. Mind you, he does not go out again today. And if anything else is wanted, you must carry it yourself in the basket." With that, he went in, and the horse was led away. But all boys are not cruel. I have seen some fond of their ponies or donkeys as if it had been their favorite dog, and the little creatures worked away as cheerfully and willingly for their young drivers as I work for Jerry. It may be hard work sometimes, but a friend's hand and voice makes it easy. There was a young coaster boy who came up the street with greens and potatoes. He had an old pony, not very handsome, but the cheerfulest and pluckiest little thing I ever saw. And to see how fond these two were of each other was a special treat. The pony followed his master like a dog, and when he got into the cart, would trot off without a whip or a word and rattle down the street as merrily as if he had come out of the Queen's stables. Jerry liked the boy and called him Prince Charlie, for he said he would make a king of drivers someday. There was an old man, too, who used to come up the street with a little coal cart. He wore a coal heaver's hat and looked rough and black. He and his old horse used to plod together along the street like two good partners who understood each other. The horse would stop of his own accord at the doors where they took coal of him, and he used to keep one ear bent towards his master. The old man's cry could be heard up and down the street long before he came near. I never knew what he said, but the children called him Old Barahoo, for it sounded like that. Polly took her coal of him, and he was very friendly, and Jerry said it was a comfort to think of how happy an old horse must be. And tomorrow, Chapter 42, The Election.
Are you there?
I'm just counting. There's 8 chapters left.
Is there 8 chapters? I didn't think there was that many. I actually held the Black Beauty book, and I had to wash my hands immediately after. But I actually held the Black Beauty book, and it didn't seem like there were 8 chapters left, if there were that many.
8 chapters left, and one might be a two-parter. So.
We only have 10 days of this left. What are we going to do after?
Well, you know what? I actually have been working on that. And I talked to the people that were selling a lot of books, and they are going to go into the, I guess, the legal jargon and find out what we can actually read and what we can't. And if not, they're going to put us in, if we just talk to a lot of the authors that write some of these books, then they can okay it.
Oh, it's going to be kind of hard with the lady who wrote Black Beauty and that era book, though. Kind of tough.
Yeah, that's why Black Beauty was okay, because nobody that is even related to that book is still alive. However, Marguerite Henry, if I could only get her on the phone, I don't know if she's still alive or not. But
just get Marguerite on the phone.
That's what I'm saying. Let's get her on the phone. Right after that, we'll have Penny Chenery. It'll be great. Oh, Marguerite Henry would be very hard to get on the phone. She passed away in 1997. Sorry.
Yeah.
Would that be a score if we did?
Yeah, yeah. Penny, I don't think it's going to be too easy to get on the phone either, is she anymore?
She's busy. Marguerite Henry lived till she was 95 years old, or 85 years old, sorry. No, 95. Wow, that's amazing.
Well, let's go to thehorse.com, and I think Christy is here, and I know that she looks forward to Black Beauty every week because it comes on right before she does. Are you there, Christy?
I do. I get to listen to a little of Black Beauty, and every time you read something, I say, oh, yeah, I'd almost forgotten about that because it's been an awful long time since I read Black Beauty myself. So thank you for that.
Is it bad, Christy, that I'm reading that Marguerite Henry passed away in 1997? It's making me sad.
No,
I had no idea.
I'm having a little moment
over here.
Well,
okay, carry on.
Can I make it a little bit better by wishing you guys a happy birthday?
Well,
yay!
Thank you. Yay! 3 years we've been doing this.
This is 3 years, and I'm going to have to go back and listen to that episode that you put on your Facebook page, but I was kind of laughing at the title, actually, because, you know, you criticize us for always trying to gross you out, and yet you started the whole thing with a show that started out with poop-eating worms.
That's exactly right. We did. And you know,
it's just not our fault.
It couldn't have been any better than a show that was titled Poop-Eating Worms and Other Olympic News.
Exactly,
you can't get
right.
any better than that.
Well, thanks for having us on, as always. We thought that we would touch on something, topic today that touches on almost everybody, because not everybody has their horses in stalls, of course, but a whole bunch of people do. And we wanted to touch a little bit on stall safety and ways that you can, obviously, there will be some tips on building safer stalls and barns, but there's also a lot of things that you can do with your existing stalls to keep your horses safer, reduce cuts and scrapes and this and that and the other. So with that, Aaron, take it away. We wanted to start out with stall size and ceiling heights and basics like that.
Good morning, everybody. How is everybody doing?
Good.
We missed you, Aaron.
Awesome.
We missed you.
Miss you guys, too. It's been bloody hot down here, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with you.
Well, let's just start out with sizes, which I think we've gone over these once before. And, you know, you'll find barns, and I run into them every day, that have been around since the turn of the century that have 10x10 stalls. Those do work for the ponies and the quarter horses, but those warm bloods, they really need more of a 12x12, you know, size barn. Most of them don't have ceilings, which is nice. The rafters is, you know, great because any horse that rears up could pop themselves in the head. I mean, you're going to need over 15 foot easily to just get some sort of clearance. You can have drop stands put in or just put them in at the corners of stalls. So I never recommend ceilings on those in those barns because it also helps with pulling out the hot air. So that's what we're starting off with. They wanted me to talk about safety in those and hay mangers and hay racks, feed buckets, and water buckets. Those are a big source because if you think about a stall, let's strip it down to its bare minimum, four walls, a floor, I'm going to avoid the ceiling thing, and, of course, a door to get in and out. So the four walls and a floor never usually cause a problem. It's when you start adding things. So your hay mangers and your hay racks. The hay rack should definitely be high enough at head height or higher so that they don't get their legs caught up in them, especially if they're going to be rearing up stallions next to stallions kind of thing and trying to puff up to each other. The ones that they can put on the ground I like better because it's more natural for a horse to put their head down and let the respiratory tract drain and do what it's normally supposed to do as they're eating because that just helps move out the dust particles and things like that. Up high, they tend to inhale all those dust particles. Water buckets, those are a big thing. They need to be clean. There's, let's say, out in a water trough area, people put a big trough out there for a couple of horses and they'll leave the hose in there. That hose is going to collect algae on it. So don't leave the hoses in the buckets if you can outside. And as you're doing your watering of your horses inside, as long as you're not boarding other horses, you're okay with it. But if you're boarding other horses, you don't want to dip the end of that hose into each horse's water bucket because that can carry a disease from bucket to bucket to bucket. Then the other big thing is the hooks that hold that bucket bucket handle to the actual bucket. Those are very big sources for eyelid lacerations and some sort of eye cuts. So those definitely need to either keep the little cap that comes with them or use electrical tape or something to cover it up because it's a definite must. I guess I've heard of some people using aluminum type feeders in their stalls. I'd be careful of the sharp edges of those in the stalls. And then, of course, the floors. The flooring is just regular dirt flooring is best. You can put mats on top of it as long as it's been leveled. I think a big trap is those mats that are not level or maybe have not been sealed together. You trip on them. If you've got a horse that's a little rambunctious about getting a shot or maybe deworming is the biggest thing. You go running backwards, and you trip on the mat. Next thing you know, you're underneath that horse. So you yourself could get hurt. Then we go to the doors. Doors going in and out of the stalls. Those doors need to have latches that retract all the way, or you need to be very good about retracting those latches. So a horse is going to dart through any kind of corner or opening they find, and those little metal L-shaped latches can make some really bad lacerations on the side of the horse as they're going in and out. I like the ones that are pegs that are behind the stall doors, but those sometimes they forget to do, and so the stall door remains open, and the horses can come and go as they want. And then the other thing is people like to see them put their heads out the stall doors too. That's great, but then you have to start thinking about electrical wires, your wires for your fans, your outlets that you have next to your barn because you're going to do clipping in the alleyway on the cross ties, things like that. You need to make sure that they can't get their mouths on it. You can just put like 2x4s or 2x2s up to block it so they can't get their nose around to that outlet that you've already got there that you bought, you know, when you bought the barn, or you just lower the place of the outlet a little bit lower.
Very good. And I wanted to let you guys know I'm putting a video up on the Horses in the Morning Facebook page right now that links to several of the, describes several of the things that we're talking about, especially the switch.
I heard you typing away. I was like, who's typing right now? That must be you putting the.
That's me.
That's right in action there. I like it. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry about that.
You type very fast.
Lots of practice and a few live events under my belt. But I just, the bit about the switches and the outlets, I think, is especially important. And in this video, you'll see a good way that a barn did it pretty well. They have, and the other example is the light switches right by each stall. And what this barn did is they covered each one of them up. you know, they've got the boxes with the switch, but the switch has a cover, so the horse can't really get at that. Of course, there's one where the cover was broken. So it reminded me, too, of our smart horsekeeping blogger, Elaine Blickley, mentioned something in a post about she had moved from Washington State to Idaho, I believe, and was setting up her new farm, and so a lot of her posts have been about that, and they added some lighting, and you know, they kept coming in the mornings trying to figure out how the lights kept getting turned on. They knew they were turning them off the night before, but the switches were at such a height that the horses were playing with them every night. So, another example.
I had a client that would go in at night, and she'd look out her back window, and she looked at her husband, she goes, "Didn't I turn the lights off when I left the barn?" And he's like, "Yeah," and they were back on, and it freaked her out for a long time. And she realized that one of the horses was turning the lights on after she went back in, so yet the horse would turn it off at 10 o'clock when it was time to go to bed.
It didn't like the dark.
Hysterical. It didn't like the dark. They wanted to still party and have their hay and their grazing time and chatting time, and then when it came 10 o'clock, the lights went off. So she quit worrying about it.
Time.
She didn't even move the outlet.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, that's the next question. Do you move the outlet or do you move the clock? I mean, the horse is able to tell time.
I know.
Awesome. Well, another thing we want to touch on, sort of related to outlets and cords and stuff, is a lot of the cobwebs that tend to collect around where we have things plugged in and we don't touch them very often can be a fire hazard, right, Erin?
Absolutely. And we've talked about that with the barn fire discussion, is cobwebs are a big source of fire hazard, because they just, you know, help ignite and the barn just goes. So
absolutely. We did a video shoot not too long ago at a veterinarian's farm near Lexington that had absolutely the cleanest barn I have ever seen in my life. It looked like it was just built. I need to get his tips on how he cleans everything. We might have to have him
hired help. Hired help is how he cleans.
Oh, yeah, but apparently this veterinarian used to practice out in California near one of the bigger vet clinics, and apparently what they did is they would get their hired help in and train them to clean the barn the way they wanted them cleaned, and then that vet clinic also would make sure that they hired help away, or they even sent their new hired help over to this veterinarian's barn to learn how to clean properly and then brought them back to the vet clinic to do it right. I just thought that was hilarious.
Interesting.
It is. It is. Okay, we also wanted to touch on things like fans, keep safe fans, what fans are safe, where do you put them?
Yeah, and I think we discussed this, so it's definitely in the fire. There's a few, and I think you have them listed on thehorse.com that were put down as a fire hazard. There's a recall on some of the fans, and definitely you don't want it so that the horse can put their nose into the fan. You want to make sure that they can't really touch the fan. So usually center fans that are from the ceiling down, that's what I have in mind, are best, and those are made for outdoor use. And, of course, then if you buy the fans and plug them in, I would put them, you know, at the top so that the horses can't get to them, or on the outside of the bars so they can't get to them. The bad thing here in Florida is if you put them at the top, that's where the heat rises, so you're just taking the hot air and putting it right back down on them. But that does keep it out of the way of harm's way of the horse.
Sure. And I do think that if you have bars on your stalls, it's a great thing to put it just outside and, you know, kind of at your eye level, because that way you see how nasty your fans are, and maybe you're a little bit more likely to clean them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's bring up the bars discussion. Let's bring up the bars discussion. I think Christy has a story, as well as I do, of a horse that was rolling in its stall and got its leg caught in the bars, between the bars, pulled up half its hoof wall, and, of course, foundered because it didn't have the hoof wall structure. It's a very nice stallion. They were going to use it for breeding, had imported it from Europe, and it's a freak accident. But they can get, and this is a big warm blood too, they can get their legs caught between those bar distances. And there's standard, I don't know exactly what the bar distances are, but there's standard bar distances that are out there. But those are something to be of concern about. A lot of people won't put them in because of that reason. The other thing is horses run their teeth up and down the bars, and they tend to wear their front incisors down pretty heavily by running their teeth up and down the bars.
Yeah, for sure. The story that Aaron said I had is actually not my story, but we shared it on our Facebook page last week from the Missouri Equine Rescue posted a report. They post reports of all their rescues on their website, and Rebecca shared this one with us where a horse had somehow, and I'm not sure which leg happened first, but this horse managed to get 1 foot through the bars and kicked out the lowest board on the wall underneath the bars. So the horse is basically doing a straddle split. That's how they found it in the stall. I will pull up that link and post it for you. And the rescue went fine. They were able to, the horse's foot that was under the wall and sticking actually outside the stall was right behind the sliding stall door. So they couldn't open the door very far either to get in there to get to the horse. So it was a particularly complicated one. And it did happen on the wall all the way down. But the horse, you know, and probably got his foot caught in the bar first, kicking out at a fly or his buddy or something, and then, you know, fell when his foot got caught and managed to kick out that bottom board.
Well, I know a barn down the street here had the Dutch doors, and apparently it was a breeding stallion in there, and the horse got hung up over the door, and actually they ended up having to geld him because he lost apparently so much blood flow to that area because that's where he was hung up. Who knows if a mare walked by or whatever, but they just kind of found him that way. So those can be pretty dangerous too. Now, I wanted to ask Aaron, what do you think the most common stall injury is?
One's on buckets.
Okay, buckets.
Laceration of the bucket or something like that. And the second, I would say, would have to be the cuts going in and out on the stall doors. I can't say it's just all stall doors. This one note that Christy and I put down here at the very end is you got to look for nails and screws that are backed out, or maybe people hung a bucket on a nail or a screw there previously when you go into a boarding barn. Check out the stalls yourself, because the owners may have checked it, but not thoroughly, and it's always good to have a second set of eyes. I'm not saying that the barn owners are lazy or anything like that, but it's always good to have a second set of eyes and go back through that stall before you put your horse in there. Make sure there's nothing protruding from the walls, such as nails that are loosened from a board or something that somebody hung something on and didn't remove it when they got done with it, type thing. Casting in the stall is another common thing, but I don't see them getting hurt. They just get a little bit freaked out. Usually you can uncast them and everything's fine. I do have two that I've seen, and I hope to God I'd never see another one again, especially the most recent one was very devastating, is the sliding, and you mentioned the Dutch doors, the sliding doors. I've had two horses now get their legs caught between the wall, outside wall, and the door itself when the door was locked shut and the horse is inside.
Oh, because there's no track on the bottom, so it just pushed out?
Pushed out, not that much, though, because there's still that ball or that silver rolling pin that allows it to slide on the backside of the door. But the one with a pony, so it's small enough in leg size that it was able to kick out and it went to where the latch is. It actually lifted the door away from the joint there where the latch was. Got its leg caught, and they had to take the latch, drill the latch off, lift the door out to free the leg. The other one found him in the morning with a warm blood, with a very large foot, somehow must have got its foot wedged on the opposite side of the door where the solid wall is, and it's a concrete block wall, brand-new barn. The barn's only maybe 2 years old. And the stall wall and the stall door, and that's right where that little piece is that sits on the ground that holds the door up against the walls snugly. You know, and I don't mean in a very tight fashion, but fairly snug. So I wouldn't expect a warm-blood's foot to make it between there. But got it caught there so bad that it chipped away the cement block, a significant amount of the cement block, trying to free up the leg, and went all the way down to the bone and had to be euthanized. Very, very devastating for the owner.
I still think they are suicidal. They're suicidal.
Pool of blood, and I swear to God, that is a freak accident. That is not a defect of that door or anything. I don't know how he got, it was a hind leg too, and I have no idea how he got his rear end into the door area like that, unless he was scratching on the corner of the inside wall, then kicked it up high and got his foot caught.
Yeah. They're just, if there's a way to hurt themselves, they do it, don't they?
Yeah. Most amazing thing.
I'm going to go outside and hug all of my horses right now and tell them I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for whatever I'm going to do to you. But this has been fantastic. A lot to think about. And obviously, Christy's posting all of this up on thehorse.com. And you guys, thank you, of course, for always being the voice of I don't know if it's reason or education or just, you know, both of those things. But we do appreciate you guys being on the show and giving us a lot to think about.
We have fun doing it, so thank you.
How about a voice for the horse?
Yeah.
There
you
go.
That's even better. I like that.
A voice for the moron horse owner.
Before we let him go, I got to say that speaking about getting cast, Dr. Jones, we had a one-ton 18-2 hand Percheron that got cast in the stall. He had a pretty big stall, too, and he got cast anyway up against the wall, and it actually took four of us with ropes tied to the legs to get him to get him flipped over because he was so big.
I believe it.
That's the only way we could move him.
I believe it. The only way I tell people to uncast him is always tie ropes to the legs and pull, you know, and not tie, but loop them around the legs so that once they get freed, you can, you know, free up the rope and they can stand up right away. But yeah,
well,
and those guys
that
have
was,
like backs like tables too, so they get stuck.
Well, that was our that was our concern is when we there were four of us in the stall with him with these ropes tied to his legs, and when we flipped him over, we weren't sure if he was going to try and stand up and hurt us. So that was one of our other concerns. But we should have known Percherons are Percherons. We rolled him over. He looked at us. Laid there for a while, hung out, got up like nothing ever happened. That's the Percheron.
Exactly.
And
speaking
to the safety issue of these horses, you may notice in that Missouri rescue report that I posted that every one of those rescue people is wearing a helmet and safety gloves and things like that. So
very good point.
That people's safety is just as important as a horse's safety, if not more.
Yep. Especially when you're right, especially when you have those casting situations, which they do happen. Well, thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
All right,
thank
bye-bye.
You. Take care.
All right. Well, yeah. Have you ever had a horse get cast, Jamie?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to – I got to knock on wood because not here, but at other barns, certainly. It's a lot easier here because – you could just actually take apart the stalls if they did get cast because they're just kind of panels. But I got the safe panels, which is like just a three rail panel. It's 5 feet tall, and the bottom rail doesn't start until about 2 feet up. So there's plenty of room, and I was kind of very particular about which panels because I've seen horses get cast and get in trouble. I remember I was driving down Ironworks Pike in Lexington, Kentucky. There's a field, Glenn. And it is, I mean, you know Ironworks. It's like the most ostentatious horse farms. It is, but just gorgeous pastures that are 25 acres apiece with the broodmares and the babies. I found a horse on the side of the road that had gotten cast from one of those 25-acre pastures. So I got out of the car, and I had a lead rope in the car, and as I'm trying to, like, hook it around the horse's leg, the barn manager comes running out because they just saw some stranger in their field, comes running out and helps me get this mare on cast. But it's like, how can you get cast in 25 acres? 25 acres to roll, and you got to roll right next to the dang fence?
I'm telling you, they just will find any way they can to hurt themselves. Some of them just, and then it's usually that same one will be the one that does the stupid things over and over and over again. Some of them are just not very bright. I'm convinced.
Yeah.
We need an IQ test for horses because some of them are just not very bright.
We do. I've got an IQ test for you here. We need some IQ tests on people, too, because I found a news story, and this is from the Horse and Hound. This is over in Europe. Somebody stole 20,000 pounds worth of tack. I don't know what 20,000 pounds is, but it's got to be equivalent to, like, it's about $40,000. He knows all this stuff. $40,000 worth of tack stolen. It included saddles, prestiges, Steubens, John Whitakers, all these amazing tack and saddles. It was a very nice place. Now, here's the worst part. This man walks into the barn. Or this person or these people, steals all this tack, and guess what else he stole?
What?
Actually, I should say sheep, because that would make you think that it's got to be a woman. They stole one of the barn kittens. There was two kittens in there, and one of them is missing. The person stole all the tack and then took a barn kitten to boot. Why would you do that? Like, it's not like insult to injury. Gosh, that needs an IQ test.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. We are plain running out of time today. We appreciate you being here, and we appreciate you being here for the last 3 years. Thank you for the nice words being posted on Facebook as well. You know, you can find all of the shows at horseradionetwork.com. All the shows will be coming out today and tomorrow and the next day. This week's weekly shows will be popping in there, so you can catch all of those if you've been waiting. If you've run out of things to listen to, you can find them there. And also, I don't mention this very often, but there is a way that you can listen to the shows streaming on your iPhone, and that is through the Hallway Feeds app. You can just search for Hallway Feeds on your iPhone. They have the best news app for the horse world out there on an iPhone. Just search for Hallway Feeds, download its free application, and you'll see podcasts at the very top, and you can actually stream all of our podcasts right there on your iPhone as well. And, of course, you can download them through iTunes. What did I forget?
Nothing.
All right,
great.
We'll be back again tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. And guess what I have planned tomorrow?
What?
Something special. Stump the Hosts. We have a guest coming on, and this time Jamie and Jennifer are going to play Stump the Hosts. And I think that Jennifer has a better chance of guessing this one than Jamie, so that's why I'm having you both play. But I have a fun one for you guys tomorrow for Stump the Hope.
Okay, can I at least request that if the person has an English accent, they actually use their English accent? Because that was not fair for Nigel last time when I had to guess as the Rolex announcer. And I'm like, do you ride? Yes. Like, oh. How am I supposed to know that that's him? He didn't even use his regular voice. If he just said one word in his own tone, I would have known it was him.
Well, you don't have to worry about an English accent tomorrow. I can tell you that.
Okay, good to know. He's fine. From Ireland. All right, everybody,
all right,
please spay, neuter, and geld, my friends, and we'll play Stump the Host tomorrow. Can't wait.
All right, sounds good. See you at Peeler's.